And welcome back. This is Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Samuel Johnson, OAM, who was last on the show in August 2019 when we spoke about his book, Dear Dad. Samuel has distinguished himself in so many fields. As an actor, Samuel won the 2001 AFI Award. He is perhaps best known for winning the Gold Logie for Molly in 2016. In 2012, Samuel started the Love Your Sister Foundation, raising funds for the Garvan Institute of Medical Research in honour of his sister Connie. Then he unicycled around Australia, broke the world record and raised nearly $1.5 million for charity. In August 2019, Love Your Sister reached their goal of raising $10 million. In 2018, Samuel was named Victorian of the Year, and he is the author of four books. And we are talking about his new book, Heroes Next Door, written with his sister, Hilda Hinton. Samuel, welcome back to Dads on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me again, Bill. I really appreciate it.
So, Samuel, your book includes some 40 stories that evoke different emotions, and sometimes the stories are heartbreaking, sometimes funny. Are you also looking to inspire people to get out there in the community?
I mean, we found the process, me and my sister found the process of writing Heroes Next Door to be quite an inspiring process, and obviously our dream is that any reader would feel the same. That's absolutely what we're aiming for. I mean, I started thinking when I was on my last fundraising tour with my sister just about the nature of heroes and how heroes have changed for us over the years. I think a hero now isn't necessarily what a hero was 20 years ago. You know, I think in a way we've been superheroed, you know, in the sense that, you know, you've got all these Marvel and DC comics and all these kind of larger-than-life superheroes that, you know, do amazing things and have amazing powers. And I wonder whether we're kind of losing our genuine, real, unsung heroes in the process. My sister started meeting these people when she was out on this fundraising tour with me, and then she'd come back to camp and tell us about these people she met, and it was invariably inspiring. I don't know how she kept meeting such wonderful people, you know. And I was pretty keen to work out what she was doing and how she was doing it, and the project Heroes Next Door just evolved from that. We ended up with a real life book, you know, telling the stories of these heroes that me and my sister met when we were fundraising for our charity Love Your Sister. But make no mistake, this is not a bunch of cancer stories. This is this is stories about all kinds of different people in all kinds of different situations that are showing fortitude and character in times of adversity, that are choosing to respond very well to the harsh things that have happened to them in life.
You mentioned then that you think heroes have changed in their nature. Do you think these days we need a tragedy to get us out there and start asking those questions, those difficult questions like, what do you want to do with your life?
I think, you know, it can go two ways for people when it comes to tragedy in their lives. You know, it can define and mark them in a negative way, or it can be a turning point or something that, you know, that signifies kind of great positive change. Mm. It really does depend on the individual and how they choose to respond to the traumas in their life. You know, I mean, it's hard not to be a victim, because, you know, life is suffering in so many ways. But at the same time, I personally think that it's incumbent on us to try and respond well to the challenges in our lives, because whilst we can't control what happens to us, we can control how we respond to it. So, you know, we looked specifically on this Heroes Next Door project to find those people who have chosen to respond positively or admirably you know, at a time when perhaps not everyone would make that choice.
And the times are particularly challenging at the moment. In fact, I think the first time you use the expression hero next door is in connection with Jodie, who helped her community after the bushfires came to town. And that's when, she asked that difficult question, what do you do with your life?
Yeah, I mean, so often it's you know, it's stuff that's out of your control that forces you into those questions, you know, whether it be a bushfire that comes raging through your town, whether it be a drought, whether it be a mental illness or even a physical illness or... But we don't just look at kind of large-scale heroism. This is very much a book about everyday heroics. You know, that can be as small as changing the culture around injured wildlife in a particular town. It's there's so many ways that that me and my sister Hilda think that that you can be a hero. You know, yeah. And I see evidence of it everywhere, and there was certainly no shortage of heroes for this book.
You yourself, you have a well-earned OAM for your service to the community, and one of your stories is about Con Karapana Geotidis, who was also awarded an OAM. But most of the heroes you describe are unsung. Do you think there should be a rethink regarding government honours?
It's not my place to say so. I don't know enough about the system. I certainly know that... it's not just people in public life that are awarded them. There are very, very many unsung heroes that do receive honours on Australia Day. It's just that the media chooses to focus on them less. Mm. I'm not sure whether the honours system needs to be reviewed or whether we need to report on our recipients in a more balanced way, because, of course, the people with the profiles tend to steal the news cycle from the people who probably deserve the attention more. I mean, I'm certainly very grateful to have, you know, to have received mine. Yeah, and I don't want to sneeze at that, but at the same time, it's not why you do it. And I get a lot of credit for what I do, and I'm overappreciated. And it's funny who society kind of accords status to and why. You know, it's mystifying to me. But I gain as much inspiration as I do, say, from a public hero as I do from an unsung hero in the shadows. For example, I'm just as inspired by Matt Botell in terms of the way he responded to his redundancy at Toyota as I am by Steve Irwin. I think there's room to have both types of heroes in your life, and I've got both types in mind. I've got those people that are next door or down the road or that are doing local work that I really appreciate, and then I've got those kind of larger-than-life figures like, you know, like Steve Irwin, or who's a particular kind of hero of mine. So perhaps a bit of column A and a bit of column B doesn't hurt.
Yes, well, there is a Steve Irwin story in the book, which is great. But do you think, I mean, your book is long overdue, in my view, and particularly timely with us facing all the current disasters. But do you think, have you got any thoughts as to how we could perhaps better recognise these unsung heroes? I mean, apart from perhaps volume two of your book?
We're very good at recognising the people in our midst that contribute. I think the people in this book certainly feel overappreciated. I mean, they're mortified to be in a book with hero on the cover. I just hope that we can read these, you know, the people read these stories and a reminder of the heroes in their lives, and that it causes them to pause for a moment and to appreciate those people around them that do play a significant role, and hopefully encourage them to share those stories, because, you know, we're the sum total of the stories we share, and the stories that we share make up our identity. They make up who we are as Australians, and it's really important that we tell our own stories, and we've tried really hard to encourage that with this book. I mean, I've got no problem with going nuts for the latest Batman film, but I just don't want to forget about you know, about Matt from Phillip Island in the process.
And we're speaking today with Samuel Johnson, who with his sister Hilda Hinton is the author of a new book called Heroes Next Door. Samuel, we've reached the part of the program where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. So have you picked one for us?
So many radio stations don't permit this kind of stuff, and I feel really thrilled that you've given me the chance. I thought I might as well just play a song that I found really recently, just this week. I happened upon it randomly, and I really like it, and I hope you do too. It's called Colours, and it's by Black Puma.
I woke up to the morning sky first, baby blue just like we rehearsed. When I get up off this ground, I shake leaves back down to the brown, 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 till I'm clean. Then I walk for I'll be shaded. I'm headed to town, town, town in style, with all my favorite clothes.
Yes, sir.
All my favorite clothes.
Right.
My sisters and my brothers see them like no other. All my favorite clothes. It's a good day.
Colours by Black Puma, specially chosen for us today by our guest Samuel Johnson. Samuel is the co-author with his sister Hilda Hinton of a great new book called Heroes Next Door. So Samuel, yeah, we were just talking about recognising these people, and yet, yeah, they are, when they, you say unsung, they don't really want to put their hands up, do they? So it must be a bit of a job to winkle them out.
You're absolutely absolutely right. These guys don't. These guys and girls don't have tabs on themselves. They're not going around parading, you know, what they do, and they're not virtue signalling. They're not doing any of that stuff. So they're quite invisible. So I relied heavily on our Love Your Sister community. And when I say Love Your Sister, I'm referring to my cancer charity. We're a strong, we're a nearly million strong kind of army now. We number many, and we're in most every town. So I put the call out to our Love Your Sister community, and I asked them to dob in their heroes, and so we got flooded in with people that dobbed, or perhaps I should say nominated, that nominated their heroes, and that's how we found them. So I was then able to, or my sister Hilda was able to then make contact with them and say, listen, you've been nominated by a friend as being a very special person who contributes and gives back. Would you mind if I tried to write your story, and then at the end of it, if you're happy with it, would you mind if I published it? Sometimes they were initially really reticent because they were certainly like, well, I'm not going to be in a book about heroes, that's for sure. And then I'd explain what a hero is to us, and usually twist their arm.
Well, there is a great range of stories. Towards the end, there are some cancer stories, and I was just interested when you say that people don't know really what to say when they find out someone's diagnosed with cancer. Have you got any thoughts as to what people should say when they're told?
There's no right or wrong, because every cancer patient is different. You know, there's certainly a long list of things that you shouldn't say, and I'd encourage people to read up on what you shouldn't say to cancer patients. You know, saying things like stay positive and things like that can be really, really aggravating for a cancer patient. Also saying things like, oh, you don't even look sick, you look so well, I wouldn't even know you have cancer. That can be particularly aggravating for cancer patients. It's important to work out what aggravates them. And you can do a little bit of reading and find out. I'd rather you read it from cancer patients themselves than from a mug like me that's never had cancer. But the number one thing that I encourage people to do is to approach their loved one and say, look, I don't know what to say. Or, you know, I'm desperate to do something to help, and is there anything that you can think of that I can do? Because often you can think that you're helping, and in fact you might just be interfering. So it's important to help in the right way, and the best way to help someone the right way is to ask them what kind of help they're after. Hopefully that helps provide some clarity.
Yeah, I mean, even just asking them what they need or what they want or whatever, it's giving them that agency back, isn't it? So they can sort of feel like they're taking control a bit.
Exactly. I mean, I wouldn't go assuming that, you know, that flowers are going to help, or that if you cook a lasagna that they might not already have a lasagna in the freezer because everyone's cooking them lasagna. You know, you've got to make sure that you're in touch with them about how you're helping, because random visits and random gifts without checking, as well-meaning as they are, there might always be something better that you can do for them that you didn't think of. I encourage anyone who's got a loved one with cancer to talk to them and to ask them what they can do to help, because I found often the things that they need are the last things I'd think of. Mm. You know,
that's like, interesting.
You know, they might just say, I just want someone to come down to the swimming pool with me, and all of a sudden you're down at the swimming pool instead of blowing $80 on flowers.
Yeah. And there's a lot of useful thoughts in this book. There's a lot of self-harm going on in the community, which is hard for a lot of us to understand, but I think there was someone described it as proving that they exist. And then the alternative was, well, get out there and do some community work, and that will also prove that you exist if you if you have that effect.
Yeah, look, there's no cut and dry answers to any of this kind of stuff, and it's heartbreaking, to see that we've created a society that leads to so much anxiety and upset. You know, look, certain people in this book have focused on community work to help them move past their own mental health difficulties. I personally have done the same. I wouldn't say that I was stable, and as soon as I devoted myself to Love Your Sister and to this goal of raising $10 million and now to this goal of writing this Heroes Next Door book, without any of that, I'd be rudderless. I'd have no structure, and I'd be in a bad way. So I mean, as pious and as twee and as bloody righteous as it might sound, if there's such strength in getting out there and being with others, you can find a sense of belonging that you didn't have before, and you can connect with people in ways that perhaps you're disconnected, you know, because you feel so disconnected when you're struggling with mental health issues. You feel so isolated, and you feel like you don't belong anywhere. And sometimes if you could just find something you're interested in and find a group of people that share that collective interest and do something collectively, then it can really bring you out of your rut. So if there's anyone listening that's really struggling to find that lust for life, I encourage them strongly to think about what they could do for others that would make them feel better that day.
Well, a big part of what I'm hearing is also setting goals, and you set that probably unrealistic goal of raising $10 million, but now you've got there. Have you reset the goal?
Yes, I have. I'm goal-oriented. I find it good to have somewhere to aim for. I love that expression, let your reach exceed your grasp. Now aiming kind of, these are just fundraising goals. There's many other goals, of course, but my new fundraising goal is to get the charity to the point where we're raising $1 million a month so that I can start trying to offer personalised treatment for all new cancer patients.
Wow. Yeah, well, yes, it's a balance, isn't it? Setting an unachievable goal and then reaching it, that's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's got to be seemingly impossible. Mm. But it can't be totally impossible. It needs to be able to be achieved, but it needs to be not easily achieved. When I promised my sister and indeed the country at large that I'd raise $10 million, I mean, it took me the better part of 8 years to fulfill that goal. You know, it's a massive goal for me personally. I mean, for other people it might be a walk in the park, but for me it's a major goal. So I like to set goals that are almost impossible, but that I know are achievable if I commit.
Well, one of your stories about a fellow called Craig Coombs, who there was that. He had the bucket list, and I've heard of bucket lists maybe 5 or 6 or 10, but he had 100 things in his bucket list, and they set about, and I think they got there.
Yeah, it was, and I've marked his best mate, Pete Bushstaller, as the hero in that story. this is a best mate that went above and beyond. When his best mate was diagnosed with throat cancer, he just said, look, what are we going to do? You know, what's all the stuff that you wanted to do that you never got around to? And Craig Coombs ended up writing the biggest, longest list. this poor best buddy, Pete Bushstaller, he just thought, you know what? I don't have long with him. He's my best mate. I'm going to damn near do everything I can to make sure that all of these bucket list items get ticked off. And they were not small items, though. You know, he wanted to meet a lot of his heroes that are very hard to reach. You know, he wanted to do, things well outside of his price range, like fly over Antarctica with his wife. And sure enough, his mate hustled and hustled and hustled, ticked everything off that damn list. And that story's called Bucket List Buddies.
Yeah, that's something I suppose we should all think about. You know, if you're told you've only got another month left, what would you do? And it's an interesting question. What would you do?
What kind of friend would you be if your best friend got told that they're on the way out? Because I'm in awe of this mate Pete. You know, he's and that to us is a hero. There's a guy that's gone above and beyond for his best mate. I mean, that's exactly the kind of hero that we portray in these books.
The other one you mentioned a little while ago was the story of Matt and his free hands. That's such an amazing story. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah, fantastic fella. He only just snuck in because he's a little bit recognised, like Con Karapanagiotidis from the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre. Matt and Con were the two most overqualified kind of people for the book in terms of they have received some public recognition so far. I know Matt was our local Victorian Hero of the Year in 2018, and he got retrenched from Toyota and blew his redundancy package on a 3D printer so he could start making prosthetic hands for kids that can't afford them running about 30 3D printers, and he's just released the open source design on his new hands, and these new kind of bionic hands, if you like, are being made from his open source designs all around the world now. And he's gone from being an engineer at Toyota to engineering new limbs for kids all around the world. An absolutely phenomenal story about a local Victorian man in Phillip Island.
Yeah, extraordinary story. I mean, you can just imagine him going to America and getting a patent or something, and becoming almost like a Bill Gates with something like that. But he's chosen to make it free. It's extraordinary.
Oh yeah, this guy could make a lot of money with his engineering skills. This guy's he's one of those really clever bunnies, And to watch him use. To watch him kind of, the retrenchment really forced him to say, listen, what do I want to do? What he was always trying to make things better and design things better. But in a way, once he left Toyota, he was able to really, really thrive and flourish. And I mean, and thank God for his wife who let him buy a 3D printer with their redundancy money. I mean, she would have been pretty panicked at that point going, well, what are we going to live on? So, I think the wife's just as much a hero as he is, because she got behind him to do something extraordinary. And he had no resources, mate. He had nothing. He had nothing but goodwill and determination. And, I mean, he was a hell of an engineer, obviously, but these things don't come cheaply. And then to build the support around that, and then to make it happen, to amass his own army of volunteers to help him, I mean, this is the stuff that gets me out of bed in the morning. I mean, I try to measure myself against people like Matt so that I can strive to be better.
We're speaking today, we're just about out of time. We've been speaking with Samuel Johnson, who is one of the authors with his sister Hilda Hinton of Heroes Next Door, an amazing book of hilarious and heartfelt celebration of unsung Aussie heroes. Yes, look, all Australia loves Samuel Johnson through his characters we've seen on TV over such a long period. He's in movies, he's done all these various things. But this book is, Heroes Next Door, is if you love Samuel, you'll love the book. So it just remains for me to give a special thank you to Samuel. Samuel Johnson, thank you very much for being on Dad's on the Air.
My absolute pleasure, mate, and keep up the great work, and I love what you do, and thanks again for including me. I do appreciate it, and I don't take it for granted.
Thank you very much, and don't forget, we'd love to hear from our listeners too. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email, and we'll be in touch. If you would like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air.